The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Football, we've missed you. Feels like days since we were watching Team GB get knocked out of the Olympics by Australia. Feels like weeks, almost exactly three to be precise, since Barry laughed in my face as England lost the Euros. But after all the waiting, it's back. Ewan Murray joins us from his jazz bar as the title race is over in Scotland. So much energy in the Carabao Cup, it can't even wait for the EFL to start before getting going. And of course, there's all manner of transfers for us to discuss with varying degrees of excitement. There's Grealish, Kane and Sancho, transfers that have almost certainly passed you by as well. Flo will go two-footed into Team GB. Wilson will bring everything back to some cricket that he did over the weekend. And we'll find out just how up for the 2021-22 season Barry is. All today on The Guardian Football Weekly. Flo Lloyd-Hughes, welcome.
Hello, Max. How you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Jonathan Wilson, good morning.
Morning. How you doing?
I'm good. You seem very glum, Wilson.
I'm just very anxious because I'm in my new flat and I've got workmen in and I can just hear things clattering around and sort of. I'm also waiting somebody to come and unblock a drain, so I'm clutching my phone in my hand, just in case.
It's live action on the pod.
It is live action, yeah.
Keep us updated. No doubt we'll get more questions about whether your drain's been unblocked.
It kind of looks like you're being held hostage in a bookshop.
He's very far away, isn't he, on the Zoom call?
Yeah.
Well, this is my new library. I converted the spare bedroom into a library.
Who has a library of his own?
Somebody
books?
Who has no friends, who doesn't need a spare bedroom. Okay. Yeah, because the man's building the stuff in the main room, I've relocated here, but that means the laptop is in a cupboard, propped up on some shelves. The microphone is sustained on a cardboard box. And to facilitate those two things, I have to sit a certain distance from the laptop. So that's why I'm a long way.
Football's hype man, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello. I think Jonathan Wilson is very correct to be anxious about the workman. I had a workman in my house on Friday and it cost £208 for him to do a job that took less than an hour.
Anyway, Rich says, how many weeks, days, minutes into the new season will Barry be bored of football? I imagine during Arsenal-Brentford, the opening game. Barry, are you excited? Are you on tenterhooks? How are you feeling?
I'm not on tenterhooks. I am looking forward to Arsenal-Brentford. I think a Brentford win is an absolute certainty. But I think by the time it starts in, 10, 11 days, I'll be on something approaching tenterhooks.
A coiled spring. Paul says, I don't care about anything apart from Wilson's heroic cricketing. Come on then, Wilson.
Yes, I batted for 3 hours and 3 minutes to save a game on Saturday. It was my Johannesburg moment.
The picture of you walking off the pitch, you look like Brian Robson looked when he went off with that dislocated shoulder in Mexico 86. Sort of rivulets of sweat going down your entire body.
I was I've never been as tired because it's not just the physical tiredness, it was just the mental exhaustion. So I faced 121 balls, scored 35 not out. And the thing is, I ran out the two best batsmen on our team. So if I hadn't done it, then people would have been justifiably quite angry with me. And I arguably cost us a chance of winning the game by doing that, but I think that was quite a slim possibility.
So you're basically Jeffrey Boycott in disguise, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, a pretty good disguise, in fairness. It was a very boycottian display.
Okay, then. Well done, Wilson. Very pleased for you. Premier League, then. Shall we start with Jack Grealish to Manchester City? Flo, do you want that to happen?
Not really. It might happen. If it does happen, fine. But I think I'd prefer if it didn't.
It's a nice answer.
I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, I don't really have a massive soft spot for Villa, but it just seems like when you've got a boyhood hero like that who's spent his whole time at the club, like it just makes more sense for him to stay. Obviously, you understand ambitions for the player, ambitions for the club maybe don't match up right now, but just what's the point? It's just boring.
I mean, if they do get him and Kane, Wilson, what do we do with this season? I mean, that would be an extraordinary set of attacking players that it's adding to what they already have.
Yeah, I mean, I think even without them, I think they would win the league quite easily. With them, and they should win it even more easily. The only thing you would say, and sort of I recognise, how can I put this? It's because City is so good, the tendency is to nitpick, to try and find reasons why this might not just be a walkover this season. And you do sort of think, if Gareth Southgate thought Grealish didn't do the tactical work that he needed him to do, is he actually going to be able to do the tactical work that Guardiola needs him to do? And obviously Guardiola will have him for much longer, and Guardiola is clearly a better coach than Southgate. But that would be the slight concern that... if that doubt was keeping out the England team, can you then get in the City team? Having said that, I think something City have perhaps slightly lacked over the last 2 or 3 years is they haven't had the sort of the Messi equivalent, somebody to... I mean, I'm not saying Grealish is as good as Messi, clearly, but he does have that sort of anarchic... Yeah, the ability to just conjure something from nothing. So maybe against packed defences, he gives City an extra edge. So... The Grealish one, I think, could go either way. Kane, I think if he goes, he'll just score. As long as he plays, he'll be scoring 25, 30, 35 goals a season.
Brian says, what exactly has Jack Grealish done to be valued at 100 million? He's a good player. Sure, but worth 100 million? How well have Villa played the window? Attacking reinforcements brought in before Grealish deal done. Buendia and Bailey represent great business. We had Mark Langdon on the radio yesterday, Barry, telling us about... I don't know if you remember, it's 24 hours ago, but telling us about Grealish and sort of Grealish's output when you look at the sort of stats that him or Lars would look at, being comparable with Messi and Ronaldo, basically.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I didn't really understand that bit of what he was saying. Is it in terms of work rate or...
Sort of chances created and, you know...
Ball carries is a big one that Love with Grealish, because obviously Grealish gets on the ball and runs like 40 yards with it. So that's
and then
one
falls
of his...
over.
yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I would share Jonathan's reservation. I think Jack Grealish is a terrific player, seems like a nice fella. I would share Jonathan's reservations about will he be disciplined enough to you know, adhere to Pep's very strict instructions, or you know, how much of a free rein will he be given? Not hugely, I'd imagine. And in terms of his price, I think you're worth whatever anyone is willing to pay for you, I suppose. And you know, 100 million is a ludicrous amount of money, but he is clearly one of the most valuable players in the Premier League. He hasn't achieved a huge amount. But, I'm not sure a move to City is necessarily the right one for him from a career, career advancement point of view is a stupid thing to say because he'd be moving to the best team in the league. But, yeah, I'm not sure it's the right move for him, but would happily be proved wrong.
I think in a sort of competitive, you know, if you look at it in a kind of how competitive the league's going to be way, it's frustrating. Is there a beauty, Flo, in thinking about just all those players playing together? I don't know. I'm just trying to sort of think. I don't know where Foden played, because Foden's been playing off the left, which is where Grealish plays. I don't know what happens to Raheem Sterling, but I just wonder, you know, could we see a sort of exhibition of such amazing football that it makes us all sort of forget that they've won the league by 25 points? Granted, the season hasn't started yet.
Yeah, potentially. I think the idea is he'd probably play in the middle, mainly as like a replacement for Gundogan or rotating with him, and probably wouldn't play out wide. I think, you know, teams like Real Madrid have done this before, and I think for some people it was magical. For other people, they couldn't stand it. So I wouldn't say necessarily just putting together a super team is always as glorious as that. And I think a lot of people in England would probably find it quite tedious, but maybe internationally it would be an absolute dream. I think it's just interesting for how Grealish perceives himself. Like, if you're at a club like Villa, which is obviously a huge club, but unlikely to certainly win the Premier League anytime soon, but probably has a good chance at winning FA Cup or a League Cup, and maybe in a few years pushing to qualify for Europe. Do you go from there where you've been this huge hero, you've got this status and everyone loves you and that's probably never going to change, and you put yourself in a scenario where you are a small fish in a pretty big pond. And like Jonathan said, you've got to adjust. Your ego probably has to be pushed aside a bit. I mean, Riyad Mahrez struggled initially, but it's worked out for him now. He's been played really well last season. So it's whether Grealish wants to do that. I mean, I think he really enjoyed becoming this cult hero in the summer. And I don't know if that would continue if he went to City.
What about Harry Kane, Wilson? Where do you think he'll be playing at the start of the season? Where do you think he'll be playing at the end of the window?
I'm not sure selling your best player is necessarily a bad thing. So in the last 50 years, there have been 8 examples of a world record transfer fee being broken and the selling team then winning either their domestic league or the Champions League the following season. Now, obviously, if you're, for instance, Barcelona, who I think have done it 4 times, or Juventus have done it twice, it is easier to spend that money well because they're Barcelona, they're Juventus, they have a pulling power anyway. Whereas if Tottenham sell Kane for, you know, 150, 180, whatever it turns out to be, the players they can sign for that will be thinking, well, hang on, they're a selling club, they're Tottenham. Why would I go to a mid-table team who apparently don't even have the ambition to keep their best player? So I appreciate it's hard, and I appreciate they have recent history of having sort of squandered a huge windfall. But I also think probably for the development of the club, hanging everything on one player who could get injured at any moment, who's probably just about at his peak at the moment, and so in 3 or 4 years, maybe on the way down, is already starting to suffer from ankle injuries. I think taking the money probably is the right thing to do financially. I mean, I understand romantically, it would be nice for Villa to keep Grealish, it would be nice for Tottenham to keep Kane, but that's sadly not how modern football works.
I do think that, Barney described Nuno Espirito Santo as a dying Jedi last season, and it was an absolutely perfect description. You know, save yourself, as he's just swinging his lightsaber around and then disappearing. He seems to be reborn. I've totally bought in to Nuno. I just think Tottenham will be a huge success regardless. I mean, I'm absolutely, completely foolish to think any of this, but it's just nice to see Nuno back from the dead now as a sort of thriving Jedi. Spurs Europa Conference playoff draw is at 12:30 this afternoon, so you will know who they've got when you listen to this. Manchester United have signed Jadon Sancho, Rafael Varane, perhaps Trippier coming in. Can they challenge City, Flo?
Yeah, but in reality, challenge means losing by 9 points probably at least by the end of the season. So I think Chelsea have a better chance at challenging City this season probably than United, because I think United, it will take a while to put all those pieces together, and I give. Like, this is now, well, he's obviously only had kind of not as long, but I think Thomas Tuchel's had more time to kind of build what he wants with the players, and I think he'll do a better job this season being able to push City. But I still think United will look good, but then in reality it will still be so far behind City.
I've enjoyed Barry Pundit saying, I'm not sure Varane's got what it takes in the Premier League.
Yeah, there's been some interesting takes, to say the least. He's too slow, which he clearly isn't. He's not used to dealing with crosses, which has been proven palpably untrue by somebody who dug out the stats. I can't remember who.
It was Colin Miller. I've crunched the numbers. There were 436 more crosses in La Liga than the Premier League last season. I hope he counted them all. 9,406 to 8,970. La Liga teams averaged 470.3 crosses last season compared to the Premier League's 448.5. Wilson.
The only thing I would say about Varane is that the season before last, the Real Madrid City game in the Champions League, he looked really rattled by a team pressing him properly. Now, that might be to do with other people at Real Madrid, might be to do with the system, because he's clearly a phenomenally good player. But that would be the one slight concern, I think, about his adaptation is, yeah, how good is he really at dealing with a hard press?
Mark says, what will be duller, Benitez in charge of Everton or Wilson opening the batting? Flo, what do you expect from Rafa and Everton?
And what do you expect from my batting, more importantly?
Yeah, that's a good question.
a tremendous opening partnership for Wilson. Not so sure on Benitez. I think it's really tricky for Everton fans because there is ambition, but it's a bit like they can't shake off the chaos around the ambition, and they can't get kind of much needed consistency, and they're still stuck in a place where I think it's about hiring names rather than actually what they need. So I mean, I think, you know, Benitez is still a good manager. It's just, will he fulfill the expectations and the ambition of what the fans want? I just don't know. I think they're just in a bit of a weird place as a club.
Paul says, what will be the result of Palace's Vieira revolution? P.S. Don't ask Wilson. I've asked him in person. I didn't like his answer.
I don't remember giving that answer.
Do people just stop you in the street and ask you these questions?
It's ringing very vague bells. Somebody asked me about it, but he had a couple of decent scenes at Nice of being quite defensively sound, but it didn't really work out in the end. I think is how it went there. I just think there's huge issues at Palace, you know, beyond the manager in terms of, you know, was it 17 players out of contract in the summer? There's stuff that's not right there, and I would lack confidence that Vieira has the experience to sort of oversee the putting right of those problems.
Steve Bruce might be getting a new 3-year deal. Begs the question, Barry, just exactly what do Newcastle fans want?
They want to win the title and the Champions League. I fear they won't be doing either this season. It's going to be quite interesting to see how Bruce gets on with fans back in the stadium. He got a bit of a free pass last season, and so they finished quite well, as I recall. But if the fans had been in the season or in the stadium last season, one suspects he might have been. Life may have become untenable for him because he would have been getting a lot of abuse, relentless abuse, some of which he deserves, some of which he doesn't, in my opinion. And may have possibly fallen on his sword, because I don't know how long it's possible for a manager to put up with that, no matter how thick-skinned they may be or may claim to be. So I don't see things improving much for Newcastle. And the fans are obviously frustrated that the club hasn't been taken over, that Mike Ashley is still in charge. And the brunt of that frustration, Steve Bruce is going to have to ship it. So, it'll be interesting to see what goes on at St. James's Park, and I suspect at times often very dull and boring to see what's going on at St. James's Park.
Sorry, Max, what was the name of the Palace fan who asked that question?
Paul.
I think he might be one of the lads I met at Beckenham at the Kent v Durham Royal London Cup game. But I had quite a lot of wine by that point, so I can't promise.
You're happy to give free. It's not like Cameo. People don't have to pay you.
I mean, if they want to pay me, I'm not going to say no. But no, it would just seem rude to kind of look. I'll answer questions on anything, but not football. That's my professional side.
Do you tier it? Like, you know, if it's a top four question, you are £20. For Palace, it's sort of like a fiver, and League One questions you'll do for £1.
Well, if anything, it'd be the other way around, because, you know, I know far more about the top four than I know about Palace. So
in a cashless society, you're going to need one of those little, you know, things that buskers have now, you know, like a £2. I'd like you to have, I'll buy you one of those.
Just to take to the cricket with me, kind of.
Is anyone else, you know, is there anyone, I'm excited to see Brentford, see what they do in the Premier League. Is there anything else, you know, sort of pressing? We haven't mentioned Ben White going to Arsenal, if that'll change their fortunes. Or transfers that people have missed. I was surprised to see.
Well, I've got a fun game for you, Max.
Great. Okay.
Of the J. Rodriguez protocol. I'm provisionally entitling it. I'm sure
yes.
One of our listeners could come up with something better. And I've come up with a selection of transfers that I suspect you have missed.
Okay. Is it now, just for me, or can everyone play? Or is it for me and then the other two can correct?
Well, we'll go with you, and Flo and Jonathan can chip in if they know. Now, I haven't included the obvious ones, which are Ryan Bertrand from Southampton to Leicester, because I know you're aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ashley Young, Inter to Aston Villa, because I know you're aware of that.
I was aware of that, but if you'd asked me this time yesterday, I wouldn't have been aware of that.
But I've come up with a few others, so I'll name the player, and you can tell me where they were and where they've gone, if you okay. know.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Okay, so first up on the rank is Patrick Van Aanholt.
Okay, Crystal Palace.
Correct.
Galatasaray?
Correct!
Ah, yes, okay.
Okay, so that's one.
Thanks.
Next up is Harry Wilson.
Harry Wilson. I mean, maybe Liverpool or Bournemouth. I don't know who he was actually at. To... Brentford?
Incorrect. I'll hand it over to Flo or Jonathan, if anyone...
He was at Liverpool and now he's at Palace?
Incorrect. Well, you're half right. He was at Liverpool.
Right, okay, he's not at Palace.
Jonathan?
Oh, he's at West Ham. He's at West Ham.
No, he is not.
Oh. All I know is Harry Wilson was the lowest ranked player who played in the Euros. Which does sound like a West Ham signing, in fairness, yeah. But...
He's gone from Liverpool to Fulham for £12 million.
Fulham, that was it. Jesus. Fulham.
Okay.
That's...
Yeah. Next, Max.
Think of the house you could buy for £12 million. Amazing. Anyway.
Damari Gray.
Oh, hang on. Damari Gray, he was in Germany, wasn't he?
He was
in Germany.
Yes.
He was at... I reckon he was at Leverkusen or something.
Correct.
Like that. And he has gone, Damari Gray, he's gone to Brentford.
No, he hasn't.
No, he's gone to Everton.
Correct.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. Okay. Okay.
Right. I'm enjoying this game.
Me too, it's
Everyone
a great
else.
Game. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, and right, so that's our next player is Welshman Wayne Hennessy. Doesn't know a lot about Nazi Germany.
No, he doesn't.
But he knows, hopefully he knows the way to...
Oh, so he's gone from Crystal Palace either to San Jose or Amarillo, given the clue.
No.
He's gone. Wayne Hennessy. Is he? Can I ask a question? Is he gone third keeper somewhere just to take the money, or has he gone to be the number one at a team?
He won't be number one.
He won't be starting.
Okay,
they'll probably be an injury, and then he will have to play.
Liverpool,
no,
Burnley,
correct.
Don't Burnley have about 100 goalkeepers? Every goalkeeper plays.
Yeah, Tom Heaton's left there, hasn't he?
He's at Manchester United.
Yes,
that was a real surprise when he was playing for them in a friendly. Right, anymore?
Right, your next one, Max, and I'm looking forward to this. Because I suspect you may not know where this player was, and I'm certain you've no idea where he's gone. And the player in question is Josh King.
Oh. Was he at Everton?
He was at Everton, correct.
And he's gone to... Oh, I think I saw... Ah. Josh King has gone to... Rangers?
No.
Brentford?
No.
I give up.
He's gone to Watford.
Ah, yeah, I think I did know that.
Okay.
Any more?
A couple more.
Oh, I'm really enjoying
it. How much time we have, yeah?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Victor Moses, who you may have thought was retired. I thought.
I'd completely
forgotten about his existence.
Victor Moses has gone.
Has he gone from Egypt to the Promised Land?
He's gone from Trabzonspor to into Miami.
Incorrect on both counts. He was still a Chelsea player and he has left them to join Spartak Moscow.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Inter Miami is a good shout, though.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I saw their highlights yesterday when they had Leonardo Ochoa, Gonzalo Higuain and Kieran Gibbs celebrating a goal. It just didn't seem like a football team that should actually exist.
Okay, I have a couple of Tottenham players. I have three left if we have time. So a couple of Tottenham players which might be in your wheelhouse. Danny Rose.
Where's Danny Rose gone?
You're so bad. You're much worse at this than I thought you'd be.
Danny Rose has gone to Watford.
He is gone to Watford, yeah. Correct. Juan Foyth.
Juan Foyth has gone to Sevilla, hasn't he?
Villarreal.
That's
close,
it.
Close, but no cigar. And finally, Ben Gibson. Defending's Ben Gibson. I suspect you may not know where he was, and I'm certain you don't know where he's gone.
Middlesbrough to Derby County.
He's gone from Burnley to Norwich City. Yeah. Congratulations, Max. You've completely shown yourself up there.
And that'll do for part one. Part two, you and Mario join us for Fitbar Corner. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. On the 12th of August, there is a live show, a live broadcast on your second screen or first screen, depending on, or third, depending on how much you like us. Me, Barry, Wilson, and one other, TBC. And it's going to be an ultimate Premier League preview, Barry, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm really looking forward to it because I'm not sure what's going to happen in the Premier League this season. I don't know what's been going on for the past few weeks. So I'm looking forward to some informed comment from yourself, Wilson, and TBC.
Well, worth pointing out that you've already done some preview in part one, which we're recording out of order. So you will be more informed right now than you actually are right now, if you see what I mean. Anyway,
yeah, fair enough.
If you want tickets, theguardian.com/guardianlive. Paddy says, is Fitbar over already? Chris says, is this the earliest that the Scottish title has been awarded? Let's bring in Ewan Murray, the Guardian Scottish football correspondent. Ewan, how are you doing?
I'm very good, chaps. Good to be back.
Sadly, not in a jazz bar today.
I hope we're past the kind of jazz bar years.
Well, we'll see. You probably don't know, but the time after you came on from the jazz bar, even though you weren't in a jazz bar, the producers piped in jazz music beneath your section on the pod. So who knows? There may be jazz coming into people's ears right now.
Charlie FM coming in your ears. Yes, I'm going to have to liven this up for the season ahead then, and pick some appropriate places to speak to you from.
Yeah, I hope so. So Celtic lost in the opening day of the season, already out of the Champions League as well. Slightly disappointing start for them, all in all.
Yes, but the bigger point is it's not entirely unexpected. I mean, as I wrote yesterday, they lost to Midgetland. And that isn't even a mild embarrassment anymore. It's pretty much taken as a given that Midgetland were going to beat them. That's four seasons in a row at the qualifying stage, and not entirely unexpected. Neither was the defeat to Hearts on Saturday, such as the position Celtic have dropped to, basically.
And I mean, the Hearts game, I caught the end of it, and actually I thought they were slightly unlucky, Celtic. You know, Craig Gordon was brilliant, the Celtic keeper absolutely wasn't. It was like he sort of leant on his controller when that free kick came in and just went for a run for no reason. But like how deep is the crisis? This is the earliest crisis of the season. How deep is it?
Yeah, I think, in fairness to Ange, I had a bit of a swipe at Ange Postecoglou yesterday in a piece, because I don't think he has shown enough, or I don't think he's shown anything yet, to suggest he can change this. And I completely understand. I don't play cards, but if you think of the worst hand you can be dealt, this is what he has. It's a really bad position that he's inherited. But I think as a manager, he has to show something. Make them hard to beat, for example. And as you explained with that Hearts winning goal, well, that's not a team that's hard to beat. It's a free header from a set piece, and the goalkeeper's in no man's land. Celtic did have a lot of the ball in the game, but that was partly by Hearts' design. But they didn't really threaten at all. And it just felt inevitable that Hearts were going to, having kind of taking grip of the game towards the end, the Hearts were going to pop up and take a winner. In terms of crisis, I mean, you have to remember Celtic completely imploded last season. They were 25 points behind Rangers. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong, from COVID problems to bad results, changing manager. So none of this is new. And you know, we spoke separately on Saturday. The interesting thing is I don't think any Celtic supporters, even optimistic Celtic supporters, think they can turn this around and win the league. They accept this is a long project for someone, whether that's Postecoglou or not, we have to wait and see. But the club has been allowed to drift. When the club was winning and successful domestically, they were allowed to drift and drift. And this is the upshot. We're in a really, really bad on-field position, certainly.
A lot of our Australian listeners, you know, are big fans of Postecoglou. He's got a really good track record. I do wonder if he was desperate to get a job, you know, in the UK. It is a massive job. I wonder if Eddie Howe looked at the situation behind the scenes at Celtic, and he didn't need that job as much as Postecoglou did, and is potentially why he said, do you know what, there are so many things that need changing here, it's not worth it for my reputation. And Postecoglou didn't have that option, really.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think, in fairness to Celtic, I think the Eddie Howe scenario also doesn't reflect particularly well on Eddie Howe, as much as Celtic criticism for how long it rumbled on. I don't think Celtic are entirely to blame in that regard. The other thing is, Postecoglou said this on Saturday evening, with this scale of job and this scale of change comes opportunity. It's a blank canvas. He can bring in his players, his style of football, his way. I just think, and listen, I have to say, they've only played three competitive games. There was an embarrassing 6-2 friendly tanking to West Ham in the middle of all this. I mean, they just haven't done enough or anything yet for me to say, okay, this could be a special manager. This is someone who's going to do something different. And he's going through looking pretty agitated about the transfer policy and actions of the club. On Saturday night, I thought he looked pretty deflated and distant. And, you know, I don't know. I just think in this job, you need real personality. And I know Postecoglou is great fun and spiky with the press, and we've seen a bit of that already. But I'm slightly unconvinced that he realised the scale of this job, or that he has the personality or wherewithal to carry through the job, you know, the scale of which I've said. I mean, it's absolutely massive.
Am I right in thinking, Ewan, he's basically coming on his own and doesn't have his own backroom staff? And
yeah, I mean,
right in thinking that might be one of the reasons Eddie Howe decided not to take the job?
I think there were issues with backroom staff, although people at Celtic deny that was a massive or a really important factor. Postecoglou, to be fair, hasn't taken screens of coaches wherever he's gone. But I think when you come from the Japanese league to the Scottish league, you know, it's fine that you inherit coaches, you understand the Scottish league, that makes sense. But I think you would bring one person with you, wouldn't you? You would bring a confidant, someone you know, someone you can talk to, someone you can lean on that understands
you. At least a
you.
Dog. You'd take, you know, you'd like...
Well, maybe he has a dog, although I don't know the quarantine situation for dogs, but he may have one for all I know. But he looks alone in more ways than one. I found that strange. I mean, Celtic in the past, there's been history of managers not, you know, getting scoped to bring in a lot of backroom staff, and that sits a bit uneasily with me. I think when Postecoglou's come from as far as he's come, literally, it would look better and probably help him if he had someone that he could lean on and trust and knows for, you know, going back a few years.
And also, if you look at this Celtic team, like the team that lined up against Hearts, compared to, say, the team Brendan Rodgers left behind him, it just looks really low rent in almost every department.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting discussion, and it's Brendan Rodgers raised the bar at Celtic in every way possible. He made players meaningfully better, increased the value of lots of players. But when you raise the bar to that level, and that included paying Brendan Rodgers a lot of money, it's very difficult to stay up there, because Brendan Rodgers is a level of coach that I would say typically Celtic can't attract. He's a top-end Premier League coach, and he had an attachment to that club, and he wanted to do that job, and there were other reasons for him to do it that doesn't really exist with many other people. So again, in Celtic's slight defence, having been at that level, had Brendan Rodgers had that level of management and club, it's quite hard to sustain that. I just think they should be nowhere near the position they're at now. They have issues with personnel, players wanting to leave. It's been rumbling on for ages. They have players in the first team that should be nowhere near their first team. They're scraping around to sign new players. They were doing it again on the, you know, immediately before their Champions League qualifiers, which are huge games. And months and months ago, I mean, Neil Lennon was in trouble last October, November. It shouldn't have been a shock to Celtic they might have to change manager. Neil Lennon left the club in February. And here we are. You know, they have no director of football, a new manager who's come in, as I say, with no, you know, no help to speak of that he knows of. They've got a new chief executive. Dermot Desmond, as I refer to him, is kind of absentee main shareholder. The club just doesn't look properly functional, and it manifests itself in, Barry, as you say, the kind of team that takes to the field against Hearts, where you kind of think, this team isn't going to win this game.
Meanwhile, Rangers are now just, what, 9 titles away from 10 in a row?
God, we've just got rid of that. Don't start that again. I think we can safely say they'll get to 2, which is quite depressing after 1 game, but I did say it before Saturday's games kicked off. I mean, listen, as I said, they were 25 points clear of Celtic. The Rangers haven't declined to anywhere near the point where they would give that kind of advantage away, even before we deal with Celtic's numerous issues. So it pains me to say it, because I wish the Scottish top flight was properly competitive, and it irks me that it isn't, even though I understand the economic reasons why. But I would be utterly stunned if Rangers don't win the league with a bit to spare this season.
Francis, can the Ackies get a mention for our 20-minute four-goal comeback? I watched the highlights on Wraith TV this morning.
It was great,
wasn't it?
Wraith 4-0 up, and Wraith Rovers' giddy supporters tweeting about their on the way to win the Scottish second tier, and then four each. Quite the game. I was at Partick Thistle against Queen of the South on Saturday afternoon. Partick Thistle scored a late winner to win 3-2. That was a terrific game. So the Scottish Championship is where it's at.
Aside from those two and the Old Firm, what else should we be looking out for this season? What should Barry be putting into Fit Bar Corner when we don't get a professional Fit Bar Corner, is what the question is.
Well, high flying Hearts as things stand. Given, focus on Celtic all you like, but Hearts, that was an important win for Hearts, and special mention too, because I mentioned him a lot because I think he's great. John Souter, who scored the winning goal, he's had two ruptured Achilles, he's a terrible time with injury. Otherwise, he would be, I would say, one of Scotland's first choice centre backs and playing in England. So I was delighted for him to score the winning goal. Yesterday's Motherwell Hibs game was a terrific game. Hibs won 3-2, very, very entertaining. And on the other side of the coin, but from all reports, Dundee United were horrendous during 2-0 defeat at Aberdeen and could have a long, long season ahead. I think there's enough pot boilers for you, Barry.
Okay, I shall keep them simmering.
Cheers, Ewan. Thanks for coming on.
Speak soon.
Ewan Murray there, our Scottish football correspondent. We're going to do a proper EFL preview on Thursday. While you're here, Wilson, any Sunderland hopes?
Well, it's the fourth season in the third tier, which is three more than I'd hoped. I think Sunderland made three signings so far. Elliot Embleton's come back from Hull. He looked good. He's looked good in pre-season. In midfield, but I don't know. I naively assumed that just because we had a Swiss billionaire in charge, we'd have signed Robinho by now, and we haven't. So I'm a little bit disappointed by that.
When's the Cambridge game?
I think it's April next year. March or April? But yeah, April. We will go to that.
Oh, great! Connor says, can Flo talk about the QPR revolution? Is there a QPR revolution, Flo?
Well, it's been a strangely positive summer for QPR. So I think for a lot of QPR fans, that seems like a revolution, because normally you would be spending most of your summer trying to work out who half the names on the team sheet are. But they've actually kept hold of a few players, signed a few loanees to permanent deals. It's, uncharacteristically normal / positive, which is probably not a good thing, because now it actually means there's pressure and expectation for once. And I think they have a really good chance of getting in the playoffs. And first unbeaten preseason in 9 years, beat Cambridge last week.
Yeah, well done.
It's a very open championship. There's so many teams in complete disarray that pretty much anyone could win it, because I think there's some strong contenders in terms of the teams that got relegated will always be in with a shot. But apart from that, it is really, really open.
Just to note, the Carabao Cup started at the weekend. That gave you quite the shock, didn't it, Barry?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Bournemouth beat MK Dons 5-0 and Huddersfield beat Sheffield Wednesday on penalties. Only two games. I don't think they were the semi-finals, but listen, if they were, good luck to those teams in the final of the Carabao Cup. That'll do for part two. Part three will begin with Team GB's defeat in the Olympics to Australia. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Team GB out of the Olympics. They lost to Australia in the quarterfinals. The semi-finals are taking place as we record. So you will know the scores. We don't know them yet. But let's focus on Team GB first. Ellen White scored a hat-trick. Not enough. They lost to Australia. They missed a penalty. They let in a goal in injury time. It was all very painful, Flo, and it all was probably quite avoidable as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely avoidable. I mean, they were 2-1 up with kind of 2 minutes of normal time to go. were looking fairly comfortable. Australia weren't that much of a threat apart from at set pieces, and Team GB continuously kept giving away free kicks in their own half or giving away throw-ins and corners in their own half in the kind of final 10 minutes and just heaping loads of pressure on themselves. And then of all the players you don't want to give way too much time and space to, it's Sam Kerr, and they did just that. Ball comes in and Millie Bright, Steph Horton and Lucy Bronze are all kind of just not reacting at all to the ball as it drops to Sam Kerr. She has time to set herself, let the ball bounce, pick out a spot, and obviously she's, you know, 8 yards out and can easily finish from there. And then they go into extra time. Caroline Wigg has a penalty opportunity. Nikita Paris is brought down.
Never a penalty, let's face it. It was soft.
It was so a very soft penalty. Paris really bought that. I'm surprised it even, you know, VAR didn't rule it out, because there were a couple penalty shouts like that in the tournament that when VAR have had a second look, they've ruled it out. But yeah, Weir misses it. And then within minutes, Australia go up the other end and score. And then they add a fourth. And then Team GB get a third goal. Ellen White gets a hat-trick with sort of 8 minutes to go in extra time, but they just had nothing left. I think it's just the fact that they were so close to getting through to the semi-finals. That's why it makes it a lot more painful.
Is it all Phil Neville's fault?
I mean, I think it's funny how the Phil Neville blame train has left the station, because that was, you know, the obvious reason for a lot of England's issues, especially the World Cup, not being able to defend. And kind of here we are with Team GB, which is majority England players, with, and especially in the defence, completely England players, with exactly the same issues. And it's just frustrating, because it almost feels like England have lost 2 years where they could have been making progress and kind of moving on and pushing forward. They've just kind of stood still because Neville's departure was handled really badly. It took so long to get a new coach in position, and even a new interim coach. And, you know, she's not had a lot of time to work with them. And then it was ages before she sort of found out that she was going to officially be Team GB coach. They had one behind closed doors warm-up game. So there's just been a lot of chaos around England and the women's football programme recently that's just really frustrating.
It's interesting. Are there players who are much better for their club than they are for England / Team GB?
Yeah, I think Millie Bright is definitely one of those players that is sometimes confusing when she plays for England. I mean, she plays alongside Magdalene Eriksson for her club, and Magdalene Eriksson is probably one of the best defenders in the world at the moment. So that definitely helps. Also, England don't have a naturally left-sided centre-back, so it is a bit of an issue in terms of working out that defensive partnership, because neither player really wants to play on the left. So whether it's Leah Williamson playing with Millie Bright or Steph Horton playing with Millie Bright, it hasn't quite worked. And perhaps going forward, it would make more sense to play a partnership that play together at club level, so they might have more relationship rather than playing two players that don't. And I think that's just a continuing conundrum, really, for England, is what they do about their back four, because Lucy Bronze is still a very good player and can have a lot of impact, but, you know, she is coming towards the end of her career. Left back hasn't been particularly strong for England for a while now. Alex Greenwood had a really good season, didn't get picked for Team GB. So it's just the defence. There's so much work to do, because I feel like going forward, there are so many exciting attacking options that are always kind of going to bail the team out, but it's just defensively where they've got to sort themselves out.
Where's the Olympics sit compared to the World Cup in the women's game?
Fairly high, really, and that's probably thanks to teams like the USA always taking it really seriously and kind of putting it on the map and wanting to perform the global stage. And I think status-wise, the World Cup is definitely the biggest one, because there's way more teams competing. Olympics is only 12 teams, but it's a very competitive competition. Games are every couple of days, and the teams that are in it are very good, and they push each other very hard. Like, there's only three groups of four teams, so those groups are really competitive and really strong. So I think it's probably not far below the World Cup, but in terms of status, the World Cup is still probably the biggest tournament. But I think it's just a shame because Team GB, this is only the second ever time the women's teams come together to play. So it's just frustrating that they couldn't perform at a time when the US are probably at the weakest they've been in years. So it's a really good opportunity. But I still think if they got through, they probably would have lost to Sweden. So in grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter that much, maybe. But they could have got a bronze medal.
How come the US have gone, I'm going to say rubbish, that's not the case. I mean, they're playing right now. They may well get to the final, but...
Yeah, I think it was still 0-0 last time I checked. But it's going into this, a lot of people still had them as the gold medal favourites. And certainly a lot of the media there expected them to win the gold medal. But I think it's issues that England suffer from a little bit, which is there's a lot of players who are getting towards the latter stages of their career and they're just not competition for places. There's just guaranteed starters who will always get a spot on the starting lineup for the US, regardless of fitness, regardless of kind of recent injury history and regardless of domestic seasons.
You mentioned old. Should just say, you know, this must be Formiga's last tournament, mustn't it? I mean, Brazil went out. She's 40. She's older than me and playing in the Olympics.
Yeah, I think so. I saw a post yesterday from the Brazilian Football Federation that was obviously translated from Portuguese, so it's quite hard to know exactly what it was saying. But they were sort of saying, it seemed like it was a sort of, you know, this is your last tournament, amazing. You know, you've been such an incredible player in women's football and for our nation, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm pretty sure it is, but I haven't seen an official announcement yet about her retiring from international football. She's going to continue to play club football, but I haven't yet seen like an official statement. But one would presume, but I think you can never really take anything for granted with her because I think she might just have a go anyway in a couple of years. World Cup in 2023, I think if she fancies it, they'll probably take her.
Can you speak any Portuguese or are you just guessing from like the font? Like
what? No, it's just you know, on Twitter you can just press translate tweet.
Ah, so right,
it's
okay.
A cheat code. I don't actually know any Portuguese. Fair so enough. I'm just kind of Googling it.
Well done to the USA, by the way, men's team who beat Mexico 1-0 in the Gold Cup. This comes hot on the heels of them beating Mexico in the Nations League CONCACAF final. This game was not as exciting, but Miles Robertson scored the winner 3 minutes before the end of extra time. Alexi Lalas was in tears at the end in the commentary box. It was quite sweet, actually. He was just like, all these people are here. It's so wonderful. You know, as someone who's burst into tears sort of once every 4 weeks on this pod, you know, I'm certainly not going to criticise. I thought it was a nice moment. Ricky says, I've realised I can mute certain words from my timeline. I muted Pogba, not because I dislike him. I just can't be bothered with all the clickbait coming my way regarding his contract, etc. What words related to football would you mute from your timeline? Barry.
I'd start with breaking, as in breaking news.
Good.
Transfers, done deal, and...
I thought you said Dundee. I was like, what have you got against, what have you got against them?
Well, I've never been in Dundee, but I'm a big fan of The View, who are from Dundee, the band. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd do for starters.
Any advances, Wilson?
Referee, decision, Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, PSG, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City, Arsenal, Tottenham, West Ham, Aston Villa, Everton, Newcastle, penalty. Yeah, that'll do for now.
Okay. I mean, that's all of football, pretty much.
Yeah, a lot of it's quite annoying. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah. Flo, have you got any more to add or are you happy with what Wilson's delivered?
No, there? I'm happy with that. I've got quite a lot of words actually already muted and it is pretty blissful and I've got quite a few people already muted. So
what have you, I mean, I've blocked all the people who generate all the usual suspects. All these people keep reacting to, you know, when, I'm not going to say their names, but somebody drops out of some sort of sporting event because of their mental health, and then someone says, what a wuss. I've blocked the person who says, what a wuss, so I don't know. And if everybody did that, they would go away and it would be a better world. At least I think it would. Anyway, Mojo says, what do the panel think is the cutoff age for a fan at the stadium wearing a club shirt complete with player's number and name? Should an adult automatically receive a season-long stadium ban if they do so? Also, is it worse for an adult to have a player's name or their own name on it? Barry?
I would say the cut-off point should be 13. And a friend of mine has an Arsenal shirt with his daughter's name on it, which, I don't think a grown man should be wearing a replica shirt in the first place. That's just my opinion. It's not something I feel particularly strongly about. I also know a guy who has a signed Swansea City shirt that must be about 7 or 8 years old. It's from the last time they were in the Premier League. And he wears it with alarming frequency and clearly never washes it because it's all the signatures are still on it. I find that really disturbing. He's at least well into his 50s, just on general lack of hygiene level, fashion level. Where you don't wear a signed shirt, you frame it or put it in the back of a wardrobe. But anyway,
there is a sort of it comes back, I think, doesn't it? I think Barry's probably right that sort of over sort of 16 you shouldn't be wearing one. But I reckon if you're like 80, wearing the shirt your grandkids have bought you with your name and 80 for your 80th birthday, is that not quite sweet in a way? Or have I just gone soft?
My dad is 82. If I bought him a Spurs kit with Dad on it, he would probably never speak to me again. Joel says, after finishing Inverting the Pyramid this summer, which Jonathan Wilson book does he recommend I read next? Well done, Joel, to you.
Well, I could be cynical here and say read Behind the Curtain, because that's the one where the advance is paid off, so I'll get more money for it. It's like choosing between your children. Which of your 11 daughters should I marry? Like, I don't know.
Well, every parent has a favourite child, and anyone who says they don't is a liar.
I mean, Angel of Dirty Faces is comprehensive, by which I mean long. The Names Said Long Ago is my most recent one, probably has the most sort of original research in it.
Zvonimir says, has Barry been working out or just liking routines on Twitter? I noticed this. People get sending me tweets sent by, sort of beefcakes or with workout routines that have been liked by Barry Glendening. Is it new season, new you?
It's just the road to hell, Max, is paved with good intentions. That's all I'll say.
If you like a tweet, it's like doing a sit-up.
Yeah, basically.
And finally, Never Give Up 41 said, if you had no other choice, how would you kill a man? Flo.
Anywhere I want.
You're not meant to be as enthusiastic as that, I don't think. I mean, basically you have no other choice. You have to do it. How?
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry, I was just being creative with how many ways.
I mean, we know how Florian Lejeune would dispose of a body, but how would you? He would find the body of the person that you had killed.
I think I would get a box of unsold copies of Inverting the Pyramid,
Then
I would stand on a chair and I would just drop them on top of his head.
Oh wow, Wilson.
Like a kind of literary guillotine, a football literary guillotine. It'd be brilliant.
I just think you're going to be looking a long time for unsold copies of Inverting the Pyramid. I need a bit of context. I mean, obviously the easiest way is just to turn off life support, but...
Have you to try not to get caught? Like, are you going to be done for murder if you...
I don't have all the...
Well, that's why my way's quite good, because it was an accident. The box fell.
Obviously, if a person's standing on the edge of a cliff, just give them a nudge. Like, if they're not standing anywhere near the coast, then
there was contact, but it's not necessarily a foul. Anyway, it's quite a dark way to end. We currently
kill them with kindness.
Yeah, well, perfect.
I struggle with that as well. I think it's less of that back than it is in sort of copies of Inverting the Pyramid.
Anyway, that'll do for today. Flo, thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Cheers, thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
We're back on Wednesday with a Europod.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, Just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.